So we're going to go ahead and get started on this next session. And thanks to all those who have spent the bulk of their day hanging out in this room and are sticking around for one more piece of information. My name is Craig Schwartz. I'm the Chief GTLD Registry Liaison at ICANN. I'm also joined up front by Francisco Arias, who's a Registry Technical Liaison with ICANN, and with Michael Young, who is with a company called Tiny Planet. And the session today is on the service level agreements in the draft registry agreement that's part of the applicant guidebook. And the reason that we've convened the session today is to get community input on a new direction that the service level agreements are taking for new GTLD registries. I see a lot of registry operators in the room, and most understand that the way the service level agreements work now is that registries self-report their performance on a monthly basis for various parameters defined in their agreement. The shift in direction here is to move from a self-reporting mechanism to one that is conducted by independent external measurements. And the exact way that works is defined within the registry agreement and specifically specification 6. Part of the goal for having independent measurements is to both measure performance from a user perspective out on the internet rather than from the way it's currently being measured now from within registry systems. And what's primarily driving the need for quicker and quicker information, that is, rather than in the monthly reports that come 20 days after the end of a month, to real time, is to enable ICANN to engage with registries when we see that performance metrics are not being met that are defined in the SLA, and in some cases to enable us to take emergency action to ensure the ongoing services of the critical functions of a registry that are defined in numerous places throughout the applicant guidebook. What we'll do today is have Francisco Arias present the specifications as they're defined right now in the applicant guidebook, and then we'll have Michael Young present a proposal that's come from a group of interested parties from within the community in response to those what's in the specification now. And it is important to know that while there was a pretty big gap between what we had proposed and what some of these interested community members originally responded with, the gap's actually closed a bit, and there have been some concessions on both sides with regard to both some of the metrics and some of how those metrics are measured. So after Francisco and Michael present the two presentations, we'd really like to hear from you folks out in the community on what you think about this and concerns that you might have or support that you might have, because up until now the conversation really has been pretty limited to occurring between ICANN and this small group of interested parties. So we want to make this more of an open and transparent conversation about the specs. So I will turn the mic over to Francisco.
Thank you, Craig. So what's the new GTLD SLA? The service level agreement is included in the draft registry agreement for the new GTLDs. Defines the service levels that are expected for the new GTLDs in the critical functions of the new GTLDs. I will be talking a little bit later about what are those critical functions of the new GTLDs. And what this SLA allows, the registrants and the internet users to know what they can expect from these services from the registries. The parameters that are proposed to be measured are availability, which is defined as the time that the service is available during a monthly basis. The response time, which is How long does it take for example, the DNS server to respond to a query made from the internet? And the third parameter to be measured is the update time. That is, for example, how long does it take for an update to a domain name to be presented in the WHOIS or in the DNS? The service to be measured, we know that the registries have more than these services that are shown here. And also we know that when the new ETLDs come, there will be some innovative new services that will be presented. But we know that there are these five critical functions that all the registries will probably be offering. And these are DNS, DNSSEC, which some people may say is the same thing. We are presenting these as two different services in order to allow for a possible differentiation, especially at the beginning of the new ETLD rollout, since DNSSEC is just starting, at least from the root. The third service is WHOIS. The fourth is EPP, which is the provisioning system for the domains, which is what ultimately allows the registrants to have the domains registered, modified, etc. And the five critical function is the data escrow, which this is a provision that has been there for a few years that requires the registries to provide, let's say, a copy of their database, the registry database, which contains the domain names, the contacts, etc., all the information, to a third party that holds that information. And if there were some certain conditions, for example, catastrophe, then I will have access to that information and that could turn it to another registry operator. And this is the matrix that joins the three parameters that are going to be measured against the five critical functions. The other thing that is important to mention and that was that Craig was talking about is the change in how this is going to be measured. As Craig said before, currently the registries measure themselves from inside their registry the registry networks. And what we are proposing now in this draft registry agreement is that there will be probes distributed over the internet, which will measure these services. The probes will be measuring the services every 1 or 5 minutes, depending on the service. For example, DNS and WHOIS will be every minute, and EPP 5 minutes, every 5 minutes. The other important thing is that we will have a centralized data gathering for all the this information, so we can act upon any emergency, for example, and contact the registry and see how to solve any issue that we identified. And also, in an extreme case, to do what is called an emergency transition, which is also described in a document in the applicant guidebook, which is basically to pass these registry services to an emergency operator that will be in standby, contracted by ICANN, ready to run any registry that goes into trouble. This is how the SLA looks like. We can see the different parameters that are being proposed to be measured. I'm not sure if that's visible. I don't intend to go over all the details here. You can see that in the draft registry agreement or in the presentation in the website. And these are the emergency thresholds that I was talking about. This is the when, for example, if a registry has 4 hours continuous downtime on all the DNS servers for the GTLD, we'll be starting an emergency transition to this emergency operator that will be in standby. And we have the same threshold for DNSSEC, 4 hours, and the other, you can see the other thresholds for the different services, EPP, 5 days continuous on time, who is seven days continuous on time. And in the case of Data Escrow, the draft restreaming currently says if the restream misses one full deposit or 5 differential deposits and there is no response from the registry in 12 days, then that's when the emergency threshold is started, the emergency transition. And that's it. Thank you.
While I'm waiting for my slides to come up, just a little bit of explanation for those of you who don't know me already. My name's Michael Young, and I worked in this industry for the last 10 years. I was running development and operations for Afilias for 6 or 7 of those years, and then ran prog development management for them for the last 3 years. So I actually was the person running the teams that launched all 5 of these critical services for .info and subsequent TLDs that Afilias were involved with. So that's how I came to represent the group. Though I've transitioned to another company, I've offered to follow through on this because I think it's very important to the community. So let's get to the next slide. What are the issues we're going to go through? Is the solution to these issues? And these proposals, if you haven't read them already, I do advise you to. They're long, they're complicated, and what I've done in the revised SLA proposal is try to make it human readable and not just to people that have a massive technologist background. The introduction is meaningful. Okay, sort. The following issues to consider. I'm going to use a little analogy here for those of you that aren't technical, and that is there's the significant change in this SLA proposal, the one that's in the draft book, changes the responsibility of EPP or registry transactions monitoring from within the complex to outside the complex. So the analogy I'm going to use is imagine if you were running a burger shop, and you promise to your customer that they get a 5-minute hamburger. Today, the way the registries operate, you come in, you order your hamburger at the counter, and we serve it up within 5 minutes. This proposal that's on the table now changes it to the counter for the 5 minutes starting when you leave your house. So this is public networks. Now the test is coming across public networks, just like you left your house. I don't know where you live. I don't know what road you're taking to get to the burger shop. I don't know if you're going to stop on the way and buy some shampoo at the drugstore. But all that's supposed to be the responsibility of the registries, and they have no control over that in this monitoring solution. So we've got some ideas to help with that in the next slide. The second thing was we had to go and have a conversation, and thank you, Craig. You guys were very helpful in explaining your motivations, but all the things that Craig said early on about why this proposal was done the way it was is not clear in the written text. So the revised proposal tries to explain the reasoning behind things. The other thing that we need to look at here is, let's face it, we always want to control costs and balance that with being responsible. So the current proposal, the costs associated with this kind of operational monitoring for ICANN will increase with every registry that's added, with every new TLD that's added. The complexity becomes more and more difficult to manage as time goes on. And to give you an example of that, every EPP registry requires credentials to log into. So imagine ICANN operating 40 or 50 monitoring nodes, and imagine 1,000 registries out there. It gets better. Not only do you have to have the authentications for 1,000 registries out there in those 40 or 50 nodes, and how are you going to protect those authentications out there in those 40 or 50 nodes, but registries also only allow traffic from known source IPs. So all 40 or 50 nodes have to be cleared with every one of those registry operations. So you've got 500, 1,000, the environment and the industry grows to 1,500, 2,000, 2,500. You can just see how complicated it gets to maintain that. And the current proposal had some basic flaws and some consideration around DNSSEC operational concerns that have been addressed in the revised proposal. An example of that was a requirement added to propagate DNS out to all named servers, all service addresses within 60 minutes. Well, for those of you who are familiar with DNSSEC, if you have to re-sign an entire registry, say the size of info or org or com, under those circumstances, 60 minutes doesn't cut it. And there are other reasons and considerations in managing any DNS operation where it may be very appropriate to delay the propagation of DNS information to certain DNS nodes, certain DNS service addresses. And that wasn't reflected in the original proposal, so we tried to add that into the revised proposal. Okay. Some of the things we tried to do to solve this, and I can't go through, it's a 13-page proposal, so I'll just try and hit some ideas of the highlights. We tried to break the new proposal into concepts of SLAs, which is performance, consideration, and conformance, against emergency escalations. There's two things we're trying to solve here for. We're trying to make sure that the user has a good experience and that there's some contractual compliance to that experience, which is fair. And then we're trying to identify, or ICANN's trying to identify, when someone's in trouble, when there's an emergency. So we try to separate those concepts because they really are two different concepts and can follow two different sets of concerns and rules. So when you read through the revised proposal, you'll see that those are broken out. And emergency escalations are given fairly aggressive consideration because everybody wants to know if there's a problem brewing so that they can help address it. And by separating it from immediate contractual breach, you get a much higher degree of cooperation and community support between different players. Another way we support that concept is to break critical public services and services between contracted parties into two ideas. What does that mean? It means that we think of things as either a registrant, consumer-based, consumed service versus something between contracted parties such as a registrar and a registry. So WHOIS and DNS falls into a public service. So of course, and conveniently, are not authenticated public services. So ICANN can certainly monitor those independently and remotely, and I think that's a very important thing for them to do because it is those are really the two critical services, DNS by far, but WHOIS is important, very important to a lot of agencies particularly. We hear this all the time from law enforcement, that WHOIS is a crucial tool for them. So we then take EPP services, which is really between a registrar and a registry, and we leave that monitoring between them. So registries would be expected to continue to monitor, state the results to stay in conformance with performance metrics. And another thing we added was in the event that a registrar does have a problem with the registry, and they don't feel that they're getting their problem resolved within a reasonable frame, they have an escalation path through to ICANN to say, look, we're struggling, registry operators not helping us with a connectivity or service problem that we're having. Because registrants do not avail directly of EPP services to registries. So keep it where the problem lies. Okay. Again, the third point really just says, we're treating emergencies and we're treating performance contractual obligations as separate ideas. And without ICANN having to worry about authentication tracking, securing, and considerations with all those nodes, it reduces the overall cost exposure over time. Okay. And mapping the solution to the proposal. This is just a little map for those of you that have not read the proposal. As promised, we took section one and we explained the problem set. hopefully in a meaningful way that everyone can understand whether or not you're highly technical. Section 2 is further support of that, and that brings us our definitions. Section 3 breaks down to thresholds and emergency escalation thresholds, which are not far different than what was suggested by ICANN anyways. So we're pretty close on those things. And 4 throws out the methodology in great detail, as well as references an attachment that gives a specific DNS test that suggests it, that covers both UDP, TCP, and straight DNS test and a DNSSEC test. 5 is on reporting, and 6 really talks about the escalation principles and responsibilities, which I think is a newer concept, not something that's been done in the past between ICANN and registries and registrars, but certainly has been done on a volunteer and cooperative basis in certain circumstances when there have been issues in the past in the industry. So this is just really a formalization of the intent, and that leads me to my last slide. I'm going to jump to the last point because I think that's really the most important one on this slide, and that is everybody, registries, registrars, and registrants, have it in their own self-interest to make this work, to make sure that the performance is robust, to make sure that the customers have a good experience. If we don't change this proposal from its current nature, most new TLDs will struggle to stay in contractual compliance and conformance with this, so it does need to change. We're setting people up for failure. And again, further, if we're going to set successful criteria for them, then the goals and objectives have to be clear, and they have to be in alignment with operational realities. And lastly, of course, as always, this is a new endeavor for ICANN to open basically an operations center to produce and maintain this type of monitoring. For those of you that don't know or haven't been aware, for the last 9 years that I've been involved in operating registries, ICANN has meant to or had the intention to build a DNS monitoring tool system. And it's in, if you look back in time, you'll see that statement in registry agreements going back all the way to 2001. But that hasn't been built in that time. And somehow we've managed to grow, flourish, and succeed without it at all. Okay. So that's all I have to say. Thank you, everyone.
Thanks, Francisco, and thanks, Michael. So what we'd like to do is open up the floor to questions and comments and statements, and also acknowledge that there's not a public comment period running right now on this particular document. So if you're interested in submitting something in writing, just send it to registries@icann.org, and we can then kind of filter it through the process and you know, act on it as we're working through the next specification for the registry agreement. Jeff.
Thanks. Jeff Newman with Neustar. I want to thank you guys for doing, working so hard on this issue. I think, the registry stakeholder group certainly appreciates the work that Michael's done on our behalf, and we certainly thank ICANN for listening to our concerns. I guess my question is, I know Michael's proposed it, but what parts of those proposals does ICANN agree with, not agree with, what still needs work? I mean, we'd like your feedback as much as, you're asking for ours, so that, when it does go into the next version. I think what Michael's suggesting, obviously Neustar, we've reviewed it, and we think it's a great document. We think it reflects what it should address your concerns. So is there feedback you can give us?
Yes, sure. I think it's very positive some of the points that are shown in that proposal. For example, the section where the motivation for this is explained. Also, the reporting and the escalation procedure are some things really, really positive. Also, I understand we are basically closing the issue about monitoring publicly DNS and who is in the proposal. So I guess the main issue now will be EPP. Should it be monitored by ICANN? Should not? I guess that's the main issue right now.
So I think one of the things to discuss for people in the room is, you know, why is it such a concern? You know, it's interesting, and we're just talking about certain people. Registrars have no SLAs to ICANN, so a registrar can operate however it wants. The SLAs with respect to EPP, it doesn't affect whether a registrant is up, whether the website is up. Really, all it affects is the ability to register, renew, modify a name, delete a name, but that really doesn't impact the end user. Certainly, you know, those should be monitored, but as Michael was talking about the difficulties and the complexities of actually monitoring EPP transactions from outside the firewall of the registry, is certainly very difficult and relies on a whole bunch of other things that are outside the control of the registry. So I'm not sure why, you know, has anyone expressed to you the need that this must be done by ICANN? Just on EPP, not on DNS or who is.
Yes, the idea by monitoring EPP is what allows a registrant to eventually have access to the provisioning system. So we think that should be monitored by us. So we know that at least the registry is there, ready to accept the request from the registrar on behalf of the registrant.
Right, but with the escalation, I mean, if a registrar doesn't respond, if a registrar is having issues in its interactions with the registry and is not getting the answers it needs from the registry, then with the creation of the escalation, I mean, you'll know about it. It's not the end of the world if a registrar can't add or modify or edit a domain name registration if they're out for an hour or 2 hours. You know, it's not good, it's not great, but you'll certainly know about it. If our SRS, Shared Registration Service, is down, we're going to know about it. Registrars are not hesitant in calling us and letting us know.
And Jeff, I just want to add to what you're saying is registries are already contractually obliged to announce, and in this proposal, sure, to escalate themselves to ICANN if they have service interruption.
That's right.
The other thing is we, in order to be able to use the emergency thresholds, we need to know really quickly when things go wrong with the registry. And one of the critical functions is EPP. So we want to know when the registry is not offering the EPP service, when it's not available, so we can act in case of an emergency.
But EPP, sorry, and there's someone else at the mic. I'll let them go and then I'll come back.
No, carry on.
Oh, I was just going to say, EPP, if you go back to the chart that had the SLAs, I mean, when the SRS is down, the shared registration system is down, I mean, you know, the SLAs are pretty, what is it? The emergency threshold was some consecutive days, wasn't it?
It was 5 days.
5 days. So I would think, even without ICANN monitoring it, ICANN's going to know from a registrar, at least one registrar, if SRS is down for 5 days. I mean, I would think. Right?
Yeah, so why don't we take that back? I mean, you're making a great point. We're not going to solve it right here, but it's helpful information.
Okay.
Thanks, Jeff.
Okay, yeah. My name's Gavin Brown. I'm from Central NIC. I was going to say most of what Jeff already said, so I won't recover the same ground. Obviously, you know, if you've got a five-day window for your escalation, monitoring your EPP system every 5 minutes is not really going to get you much. What I would say is that as a registry operator who's not required to have any sort of service level agreement, but we have one anyway because we have an economic interest in providing a service to our registrars. No registry is going to voluntarily take their EPP system down for extended periods of time because it's going to kill their business. So you have to recognize that perhaps there's an economic effect that means you don't have to worry so much about kind of extensively monitoring things in depth and intensively. You have an escalation process. The registrars are going to be on the ball. They're going to do that monitoring for you. As long as you can maintain good communication between yourself and the registrars and yourself and the registries, that will get you what you need to escalate when there's a serious critical outage.
Thank you. Ram.
Hi, I'm Ram Mohan from Affilias. Perhaps a little different from what the gentleman from Central Nick was saying. I actually think that if you're ICANN, you do need to have a view of what's happening at the registries. So I'm actually coming here to say the measures that you're proposing, the principle is correct. And I certainly would not depend, if I were ICANN, I would not depend upon registrars notifying registries, notifying ICANN as the notification mechanism, if you will, because this is serious stuff and it does need to be monitored. To Jeff's point, I think you might want to think about maybe replacing the EPP component with the DNS component, because that's really what is critical. That's what really matters in terms of end-user impact and consumer impact in the industry. And that might be something that has far greater relevance to the world as compared to EPP. Clearly, EPP is just a contractual thing. But as Jeff was saying, if EPP is down, it doesn't make the news. If the DNS is down and significant domain names go down, that makes the news, and you may have much greater impact as a result of doing that.
So, Ram, are you suggesting that we should continue to have an SLA for EPP, but just the measuring methodology should remain as it is now?
No, I was actually saying, I was agreeing with what Jeff was saying, that the EPP measurements, they feel to me, as an operator, they feel like they're nice to have measurements. The bottom line of EPP, whether you measure EPP or not, registry operators make money by EPP being up. Okay, registrars, and there's a virtuous chain there. There's an economic benefit that gets through. Okay, so it's in the best interest of those parties to keep it up and running. But if you look at the DNS, the impact on end users is much, much more significant. So what I was proposing is to not worry nearly as much about EPP.
Okay.
And to worry much more about DNS, because the impact is much larger.
Thanks. Jeff.
Thanks. And one thing that Eric just reminded me of, so he was only addressing the EPP as far as availability and uptime. But if you go back to the regular SLAs, on there is EPP response time, and the EPP response time is dependent on a couple of different things. It's dependent on business model. For example, for .travel, which has authentication that gets kind of in the, I don't mean in the way, but it's in the middle of EPP response time. So we have to actually check whether something's a change is authenticated before actually responding. So that would not necessarily meet that SLA, but for a good business model reason. The second thing is that it also doesn't take into account the amount of what really impacts the end user is not only what the registry does, but it's the registrar's ability to, like, for example, form EPP commands, send those commands to the registry, take the information back from the registry, and translate that into the action on behalf of the registrant. So even if the registry is making is fulfilling its response time completely, the end user could still be impacted, if not greater, by the registrar's actions as a result of that. So kind of adding on with what Ram said, these are nice to haves, and they're probably pretty important between, for example, if back-end operators and a front-end operator, we're going to certainly commit, and as I'm sure Affilias and every other one is going to commit to service levels with their front-end registry. It's important as far as a contractual commitment, but from an end-user standpoint, I don't believe that's something that really needs to be monitored from internally, monitored by ICANN externally in the internal system, yeah.
Thanks, Jeff.
Gavin Brown again, just to follow on from what Jeff was saying, something that occurred to me when he was talking about the EPP response time is if you're a TLD that's in a sunrise process, there's a good chance that when a create command comes in, it's going to have to go out to the IP clearinghouse. That means that your service level is basically proportional to the service level of your trademark clearinghouse. So you have to make sure that, you know, if you're going to be applying these very strict service levels, you have to kind of have caveats in for special conditions such as the sunrise. One of the things I would say is that I agree absolutely with Ram that that this is a nice thing to have. We do it. We do have remote monitoring of our EPP system as well. We have three different locations all over the world, and we check our response time for each of the commands we do. It's really important for us for kind of measuring the health of the system, for knowing how we're doing in terms of keeping up with capacity, knowing how much capacity we need to provision in the future. So we do this voluntarily because we need this information for our business. And I would agree that, you know, from a research and operational analysis perspective, it's worth doing these things. I'm not sure it's worth baking them into a service level agreement, though. But I do think that it's important information to have, which is why we gather it in the first place.
Thank you. Do you have any additional guests? I see Greg Aaron stepping up to the mic.
Hi, thank you. Greg Aaron from Afilias. Currently, when we turn in our ICANN reports, those are published. So our self-reporting figures are publicly available. Is ICANN planning on publishing these numbers for the new TLDs?
So we will publish. I mean, I think the way the proposals come from Michael Young and the interested parties is that there's some type of consultation about the publication of those measurements. And I would think, just as the current monthly reports are on a 90-day delay, that there would have to be some consideration for that as well, for the same reasons that reports are as they are now.
Right. One of the observations is if you're measuring over the Internet, you'll get varying results depending on where your probes are and where the registries are. So one of the potential effects of publishing the information is you're going to give comparisons between registries which may not be necessarily equal. And, of course, those registries are going to be competing with each other and so forth. And so... yeah. So, you know, one of the problems is comparing apples to oranges, and then putting that out there, and people not understanding what the numbers actually mean.
Just want to, Ram was saying everyone will go to Marina and Ray. I think I want to make clear that the idea is to have probes all over the Internet, not just in Marina and Ray.
Yeah, Francisco, my point really was that in what Greg was saying, the user behavior for those registries that may be marginal would be to relocate their server locations to be near wherever your monitoring locations are, because it's cheaper to do that in some cases than to try and, you know, get performance gains. That's all.
Things are coming out of my head in kind of bits and pieces, so I keep on coming up. If you could go back to the emergency escalation slide. One of the things that occurs to me is that there are situations where you have an EPP unavailability that could have significant impact on users. The thing that comes to mind is if your registry isn't auto-renew, it's auto-delete. And if registrars can't renew domains, then you might find that domains go dark, which is a bad thing. But there is a possibility that rather than doing a failover at that point, the registry might be able to put mechanisms in place to mitigate those effects. So, for example, if I know that there's going to be a temporary outage on our registry system, or if it's over Christmas, for example, when we don't have 24/7 support in our office, I can just turn off domain deletions so that anything that was due to delete during that time, I just kind of leave it in the system, and we catch up at the end of the holiday period. So it may be worth looking at kind of less extreme alternatives to doing an emergency failover. I guess that the escalation process has that somewhere, but I haven't seen it in the SLA itself. But there are things that registries can do if they're having a problem with their front end, that they can turn switches on the back end to keep things running in a diminished, still mostly functional state.
So do we have any other additional comments? You know, this discussion has been helpful. Some of it we've heard before. Some of it is new. Ram just mentioned these, you know, unintended circumstances, and for the non-technical people in the room like me, that actually makes a lot of sense and is not something that I had thought about before. So I appreciate those kind of remarks. Michael or Francisco, any closing remarks? Oh, I see Norm Ritchie coming to the mic.
Yeah, just wanted to make one quick comment. It's Norm Ritchie, ISC. We saw in there 100% availability on DNS, which I believe is the correct thing. However, that's not possible to measure that. It's a good goal, but not possible to measure it.
I'm sorry.
Wait, you couldn't do that with probes. You can't measure zero downtime. You could report it, but I don't think it could be measured by a probe. You'd have to probe continuously.
I guess you mean from a one probe point of view.
No, you'd have to have continuous probing to ensure that it was always available. Which is not all service attack.
I understand what you're saying.
However, I agree with the target.
Thanks, Norm.
You
switched sides. Okay.
Yeah. What Norm is basically saying is that there's an infinite amount of difference between 99.9999% and 100%. Because to guarantee 100% in a mathematical sense, you have to guarantee the delivery at the resolve side of every single query that gets sent to the server. So it's a kind of mathematical limit that prevents you from saying it. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, that's what I mean. So is that if you want 100% SLA, you have to, every single packet from every single resolver has to be logged and recorded as arriving at the destination, which is nice but very hard.
Werner.
Yeah, Werner Staub. Just a question. What is the rationale of having such a high availability requirement for EPP? For all registries. If a registry is small, has a small number of changes to the zone file, why do we have to respond that fast? It's actually a useless cost imposed on a registry operator in certain cases. There's absolutely no justification.
Actually, the SLA is based on the current SLAs for the SLAs for the current GTLDs.
I know. The current GTLDs typically have a certain volume. We talk about things that have a million domains, that have 5 million domains. And you may well have registries that have, for good reasons, much smaller volumes. And there is no reason to have that. It is important to have the DNS 100% available. But for you to be able to make changes and possibly have to wait half an hour, who cares? There used to be updates in the past. One of the biggest registries, maybe the biggest, you know, whenever you send the thing through, it would only have an effect once or twice a day. So there's no reason to have such a high availability requirement.
Thanks, Werner. Oh, it seems like we're spurring some more interest here now. Lots of folks coming to the mic. Yes.
Hello. My name is Mathieu Veil. I'm the manager of Dordefort, the AFNIC. Is the manager of data for the CCTLD, and we are also interested in GTLDs. My question actually is for those techies in the room. Can we go back to the escalation slide, please? Because I was intrigued by DNSSEC, and then suddenly I realized we're speaking about transferring emergency transfer of registry operations, and I'm wondering, does that work with the DNSSEC signed registry? How does that work? Because I've always understood that you don't do transfers if you don't have the private keys and so on and so forth. So my question is an emergency transfer possible with a registry that is DNSSEC signed?
Yes.
Yes, indeed.
How does that work?
You re-sign the entire zone.
Yeah, we should talk about this offline, but it's definitely possible.
Okay.
It will take a long time. First, you have to revoke the DS and the root. How long does that take? You have to introduce the new operator. We're talking about a week.
That's what I thought. Thanks.
Jeff?
No, I think that's a good point that was just raised about how long it would take for emergency transition, because then you'd actually have to involve IANA, too, in the Department of Commerce. And you know, one of the observations I wanted to make, and it's a shame because a lot of people hear from the last discussion, so maybe this is for the record, but there are members of the GAC that are arguing for lowering the technical standards to encourage those in developing countries to apply, in addition to providing funding. And you know, look, this kind of stuff isn't easy, and I'm not sure there's a correlation between this. You can't lower the technical standards and lower you can't lower the technical standards but then expect them to meet these kind of SLAs. So, I mean, I think it's input to give the JAS group and others, and certainly the government advisory committee, that it doesn't work that way, because they're demanding that these registries stay up, and they're demanding accountability and compliance and contract compliance, yet they also under their breath say, but we need to lower the technical standards to allow developing countries to apply. And you can't really have both.
Thanks, Jeff. I'm going to give Ron the last word, and I've been told that we're over time, and in this hotel you can't go over time without incurring lots of additional costs. So we need to wrap up. So, Ron.
Thanks. I'm going to speak kind of wear an ESSAC, Security and Stability Advisory Committee, hat on, and I'd like to say that I think it's important that the technical standards not get lowered. You know, it may be a small registry today, but the expectation of the end user is that the registry run well and the registry be safe and be stable and be resilient. And I think in those areas, it's important to just keep the standard very high. And I mean, I think the world is looking to ICANN to ensure that it provides the coordination and provides a bar that is pretty high. And I would strongly push back against any efforts to cut the standards down.
Thanks, Ram. Thanks, Francisco. Thanks, Michael. And thanks to all the participants for staying on and contributing. It's clear that we still have some work to do together. So as I said earlier, if you have additional comments that you'd like to send in, just forward them to registries@icann.org. And thank you, and have a good rest of the night.